Logistics Co-op is a proud sponsor of the Loco Experience podcast. We started Logistics Co-op to help Northern Colorado local businesses compete with the big box, big tech monopolies that have put tremendous strain on the family business. If you want to raise your level of competition with service, Logistics Co-op can be your solution. We deliver anything from Colorado Springs to Wellington for easy-to-understand fees that are far less than the national carriers. If you are looking to raise your services with delivery to compete with the national behemoths, Logistics Co-op is your solution. We're here to help people shop and ship local. Visit logisticscoop.com to find out more.
Tim and Danielle Jordan joined me in the Loco Experience Studios on March 5th, 2024, just 4 days removed from concluding the sale of a pair of legacy businesses in Northern Colorado, Palmer Flowers and Paul Wood Florist, locally owned since 1976 and 1933, respectively. They sold to one of the largest flower enterprises in America, Family Flowers, a privately owned company that operates legacy flower shops all across the country. I met Tim in the spring of 2015, soon after he and Danielle had purchased the majority stake in Palmer Flowers from its founder, Spiro Palmer. Spiro became one of my first banking clients when I moved to Fort Collins in 1999, and I was initially shocked that he'd pass along his legacy to such a young guy. The more I got to know Tim, however, the more I came to understand what a fine decision Spiro had made, and I've kept a patient but consistent bug in Tim's ear about how much he'd love to be in a Loco think tank chapter. This last fall, when we caught up over lunch, Tim shared that it was probably never going to happen, as he and Danielle operate the business in a tandem effort, and if he was in a peer advisory chapter, he'd feel off balance with her and what has worked for them since they started their first business together while still in college. Disappointed, but charmed by his respect for his partner and intrigued to get to know Danielle a little bit more, we scheduled a podcast conversation. After a postponement due to illness, we landed in this timely spot, just days removed from their biggest business transaction to date. Tim and Danielle have been together since high school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and came to Fort Collins to attend CSU. Tim is full of business ideas and marketing talent, and Danielle keeps a sharp eye on the numbers, and together they've run as many as five businesses at a time. They're also kind and charming, smart and savvy, and I know you'll enjoy, as I did, my conversation with Tim and Danielle Jordan.
Let's have some fun.
Welcome to the Loco Experience Podcast. On this show, you'll get to know business and community leaders from all around Northern Colorado and beyond. Our guests share their stories, business stories, life stories, stories of triumph and of tragedy, and through it all, you'll be inspired and entertained. These conversations are real and raw, and no topics are off limits. So pop in a breath mint and get ready to meet our latest guest. Welcome back to the Loco Experience. My guests today are Tim and Danielle Jordan, and they are the owners of SG Window Tint, Mold Removal Express, and as of very recently, former owners now of Palmer Flowers as well as Paul Wood Florist. How's it feel to get out of the flower business?
It was bittersweet, yeah. But it was the right move for us. So we're excited, and we're excited for our people and for our community.
Spiro Palmer was one of my first notable clients that I ever interacted with when I first moved to town.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah, no, and so quite a legacy, quite an opportunity, and, you know, he even said way back then, you know, selling flowers for money is kind of for suckers. You get real estate's where it's at.
You get sucked into the flower industry because it's such a fun thing to be able to give somebody that exciting flowers there, especially when you're there for their big occasions. And so it's easy to push all the other money stuff aside and just focus on that. And
well, you do it well, industry. And I'm sure it can work. It's just such a, like, the ups and downs and the seasonality of it, and just, you know, imagine, like, supply chain and all of that.
Yeah, it's a creative manufacturing business, which those two things are very complicated to manage together. I would say that we had a really good hold on it, and COVID kind of switched things up a little bit. And there was a national group, the name's Family Flowers. Brian and Kevin McCarthy is who came in.
Oh, that's cool.
And we've known them for a long time. Sure. I met them a long time ago, and this is their model. To buy high market share, high brand value of flower operations, and they overlay their services on top of it.
So right.
They're accounting, buying.
So a lot of things become easier, lower price point on your cost of goods sold because of their buying power. Yeah. All those things that's kind of the same reason that there's hardly any independent veterinary practices.
For sure.
Right? Very few flowers in the same way. Let's set the stage a little bit. You guys have been entrepreneurs together for, what, over a decade?
2010.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when we got our first business.
Almost 15 years.
Tell me, and maybe Danielle, I'll start with you. Yeah. Why don't you share with me, like, your divination of duties and what you guys, what roles you guys serve for these companies?
Yeah, so Tim and I are very different business people. He is more marketing, creative, strategic planning. I am 100% accounting. I love to have facts, and so that's kind of where we've divvied up. I'm also a big advocate for all of our people within any industry we have, so I've kind of taken over the HR side of things.
And HR is
HR is definitely not my favorite way to go, but I do love my people wholeheartedly, so it's kind of just naturally gone that way.
Yeah.
But I am the pessimist. I will look at worst case scenarios. Tim will look at the absolute best case scenarios, and then we find somewhere in the middle. And that seems to work the best.
I've heard of heard it said before that if you want to talk yourself out of ever being in business, go get an MBA.
You know,
you learn too much about finance and money, and you're like,
for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, I would say that probably my general character has been to, you know, set really high goals and then, frankly, make it about a third of the way there.
Nice.
You know, and so having that strong financial understanding with that vision probably has been a propellant for you guys.
Yeah, it was the case where I had to justify every deal, you know, that we did.
Right.
Because back in 2010 through 2015, we did a lot of deals very, very quickly.
Mm.
And but we looked at 10 times the number of those deals.
Oh, wow.
And it just... Mm-hmm. I had to prove it and then prove it and prove it again, which was a great exercise, and it worked out very, very well for us.
Well, we'll jump into how you jumped into business a little bit here. Let's set the stage. What was Paul Woods, Palmer Flowers? Tell me about, like, locations, staffings just a little bit, and then also about the other two companies that you still operate.
Yeah, the flower shop, Palmer Flowers, is three locations of the brand Palmer Flowers, one here in Fort Collins, one in Lakewood, and
one in Loveland.
I didn't realize there was a Lakewood.
No, excuse me.
Loveland, not Lakewood.
Loveland in Greeley.
Okay.
Apologize. So one in Fort Collins, one in Loveland, and one in Greeley.
So I got the Tri-Cities covered.
Exactly. And Paul Wood is a boutique add-on to that, so they operated as their own brand, but really kind of our services overlaid on top, the Palmer Flower services.
Oh, not distinct locations even?
Nope, just the one location in Old Town Fort Collins.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. But all services kind of merged together within Palmer Flowers.
Gotcha. And did you send, like, more of your weddings to Paul Wood and stuff like that? It became kind of the specialty brand more?
Yes. It really became the brand of kind of downtown, kind of a more urbane, you know, walk-in. What you would feel is of more like a back east flower shop.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I'd say most of our weddings stayed with Palmer. We had kind of three locations, but we have one main location that we service some of that out. But Paul Wood, you know, started during the Great Depression, so it's been downtown.
Is that right?
Forever. Yeah,
wow.
It's just an amazing brand long term. So that's why we kept that brand separate. But really, the whole team merged together when it came to even
actual
having
operations and orderings and things like that.
Absolutely.
Training, company picnics.
Yeah, yep. Even if we needed help at one store versus the other, we could easily pull from any of our locations and have a designer either from Loveland or Greeley to come and help either at Paul Wood or in the main store if we had a big wedding. And so we were able to have a lot of those shared services in between as needed.
Well, scale really helps, I imagine, in your business.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. So, but the other very interesting thing about it is that it was employee-owned. So we had eight employee owners. Generally somebody from each of the locations or each key department in the organization.
Okay.
Worked pretty darn well, honestly.
Most of those were inherited from acquisition time?
No, there was only two remaining from when we acquired the business
From Palmer's.
Yep. There were four at the time. Two had retired.
Oh, I see.
And then we'd added five or six.
I remember that was part of, like, when he was shopping for a buyer. It's like, well, somebody that's willing to allow my long-term employees to become co-owners is part of what I want to see.
Yeah.
And
you guys continued that with Paul Wood, too, then?
Very much.
Oh, yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
The GM of Paulwood, Sue Charles, I saw today. She's amazing and has been a pillar for Palmer Flowers. I mean, she's obviously the backbone of Paulwood, but she's a pillar for the Palmer brand as well.
She's just one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in the world, too.
Yeah.
Anybody who meets her immediately leaves the room and they're just like, oh my gosh, I loved her. She's just one of those people that you can just immediately trust and you just love.
Yeah, we know those kind of people. It's a superpower for
it's
sure.
It's amazing.
Right. Is she staying with the brand then
she
and
is.
Stuff too?
Yeah.
So that's part of it's the shops, but it's also the talent pool that's been developed because it ain't that easy to it takes a while to make a good floral designer, I suspect.
Yeah, that's what this team targeted was brand equity and the people.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because they, I mean, all had a planned exit, all the owners, but they got a quality exit all up front, as well as have the opportunity to keep their job. Right. which was a big realization to us of, hey, you know, the only time they could recognize that equity was at a departure.
Right.
They were thrilled to not have that. So.
And also just some like brand new opportunities that, you know, really they couldn't have with us. So just like some traveling to help with other florists in other states or different design opportunities. So just a completely different little outlook on some day-to-day operations, change it up a little bit. So everyone seems real excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
If it works, like everybody kind of wins, right?
Yeah, right?
Like when these kind of things work. And I'm glad to hear it's a family-owned company rather than some kind of a stock market chase.
And they're just good people. I mean, just how they've interacted with our staff so far has just been phenomenal. Just truly does seem like they care and they're going out of their way doing some things they don't need to be doing, and it's just it kind of re-solidifies that this was an awesome
made the
decision.
Right choice.
We're excited.
And this was
excited.
This was last Friday and today is Tuesday.
It's very fresh.
So you're walking around with a big wad right now wondering what you're going to spend all that money on. You got a Tesla Cybertruck in your order stage?
No. It's winding up an entity like this because it was an asset sale, as they typically are. It's way more complicated than you think. Even people who have been on both sides of multiple transactions, when you're talking the size that it was, it is more complicated. So it will take some time to realize those gains.
It's going to be a really crazy few months between transitioning, getting everybody, you know, all transitioned to their side, and winding up a business too. Because, I mean, well, as much as we're training them, I still have all my normal day-to-day operations that I need to finish up and do. So it's going to be a little hectic next 30 days, and then hopefully we'll simmer down a little bit after that.
Well, I'm really honored that you took the time to be in here today, even despite all that stuff that's going on. Let's talk about briefly, and I want to come back to the flower conversation because I think it's really interesting business that is mysterious to most people.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the other companies. Yep. SG Window Tint, is that your longest held?
Yep, we bought that in 2010. It was brand name of Sunglow at the time. It was a commercial residential only window tinting company, so we tint homes and businesses, basically. What we bought there was relationships, real strong ones. Denver Broncos, CU.
Oh, wow.
Some real big commercial clients out of Denver that are still clients of ours today. But today it looks a lot different. Now we have two locations, Lakewood.
So now I get where you're coming from there.
and Fort Collins here up in, actually not too far from where we're at, here in Old Town Fort Collins.
Okay, yeah, because you moved. You were over in Lincoln or Link Plain area there. But
Now we're right off of on Jefferson.
Yeah,
Jefferson and Mountain, basically.
Yeah.
Now we're 50-50, half commercial residential, which we're one of the larger commercial residential tinters in the state of Colorado.
Okay.
But the other half of our business is all tint and paint protection film on retail customers. So
cars.
Yep.
Oh, and paint protection film. So not like a crazy vehicle wrap, but if you just want your car to be all white.
Yep.
We can do that?
Yeah,
it's clear. Or matte finish.
Oh, I see. More like the front ends and different things like that with real wear points.
You can't now do a full vehicle, though. Just
really?
Mine. It looks awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah, so big push on changing the finish of the paint with paint protection film. So running a gloss paint job all matte.
Right.
Very popular. It's expensive, and the material's very expensive.
The labor ain't too cheap either, I reckon.
Yep. So when I say retail, we are working with all typically newer or new to you, but typically higher end vehicles. It's a
You want to get flames in your Corvette, it's a good place to do it, plus super dark tint windows. Yeah. Will you tint windows beyond the recommended factory or the recommended Colorado State allowances?
Yes. Colorado State allowances are kind of bogus.
Totally.
Most of our vehicles are illegal in the state of Colorado.
Well, I totally had super dark tint windows on my Astro van that I just got rid of.
Nice.
And nobody's ever said boo.
No.
Well, I think most vehicles actually come with the back actually illegal, from the manufacturer.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we'll tint to that to match. And then obviously if we're doing windshield or something, we make sure that it's safe.
But it's not your job to enforce dumb laws of the state of Colorado.
Yeah. We inform our customer, but at the end of the day, it's their decision.
Yeah. Yeah. And Daniel, you have the same role here, obviously.
I don't do a whole lot from day-to-day operations on this one. I've kind of pulled myself from that. When we first got it, I ran it, and Tim had a job. And then we switched when I went to school to get my master's degree and get my CPA license. So then at that point, he took over, and I got a job. Oh, for sure him. Yeah, for sure.
Sorry.
No, it's totally good. I'm an accountant about our heart, like I said. Sales are hard for me.
Marketing ideas.
None of that comes natural to me, but give me a spreadsheet or anything in QuickBooks and I'm your man. Yeah. So,
well, that's super useful. Yeah.
So now I do all of the back end. I do all of our accounting, bookkeeping, payroll, and that sort.
Yeah.
And the model, just quickly, is a heavy performance-based compensation model.
Oh.
So everyone, even the receptionist, is paid on commission.
Oh, interesting.
And took a while to get a base of the right people, but with the right people, it
just kind of crushes it out.
It runs itself.
Talk to me more about that, because that sounds pretty, you have to make sure they at least make a minimum wage kind of a thing in some fashion.
Yeah.
But.
Mm-hmm.
But how does the receptionist get money on commissions?
Yeah, so they get 2% of all the auto appointments that they schedule.
Oh.
So, which is the reason we did it that way is it's similar to how the installer gets 30%. Obviously, that's their entire compensation. Receptionist has an hourly base also, but so
they're not contractors.
Nope,
they're employees, mm-hmm. but they get 30% of the ticket, kind of.
For our install techs, they're contractors because they make their own schedules.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to say. It sounds more like a project-based thing.
Our receptionists, they are all employees.
Okay.
Because we regulate their hours when they need to be there, and then they have an hourly wage on top. So,
is that hard to track all that?
It was. As CRMs have gotten better, and then I've gotten a little bit into database development and app development, so we just, every time something changes, we have a proprietary database that calculates all of our payroll, so not really anymore.
Does that make you uncomfortable, or you can go back in there and find out how all the math got done?
No, it's not very... I do oftentimes ask if it's correct.
if it's way too much.
If it's usually, if I'm like, this seems really high, I will be like, can you please go back and confirm all these? And he does, and sometimes it's wrong, and most of the time it's not. But at this point, we're pretty good about it, I think.
It's pretty automated, so it's an export out of a CRM or ERP, and then just the app that's built to upload and calculate all the commissions.
Yeah. Well, and usually your employees will let you know if you didn't pay them enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They probably won't if you do pay them too much.
Yep. And the,
also true.
The way we built it sends them out an itemized.
Is that pretty much the staffing then? Is you've got some reception customer mm-hmm. service and some installer techs, and that's pretty much it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Cleaning crew comes in once in a while. They don't have to bother with that.
Yeah, has a cleaning person comes in. Yeah.
Yeah. So it has its ups and downs, but generally it does a pretty good job of running itself because good people get paid higher than market because they are able to leverage their skills.
Well, how do they influence the number of customers coming in? Or is that all you trying to drive it with marketing, Google Ads, different whatevers kind of thing? Or what's the secret to getting customers in that business?
So I would say, to answer the first part of the question, we drive all of the initial leads, 100%, right? And we can talk about that, but that's AdWords, social, all that kind of stuff. But I think that they probably have a bigger determination on how many customers I get, how well they present the product.
For sure.
How well they send out the quotes, how aggressive they are. Not aggressive, how thorough they are in their follow-up procedures.
Do they ask for referrals?
Yep. So that's how they influence things. It's the easiest way to describe it is if we're having winter, we're having a slow week, whatever. It's easy for me to call, you know, Jasmine today and say, hey, we have a slow week at our Denver shop. Could you call last week's Denver quotes that haven't responded to us and see if you can get a few people in? You can even offer them a 10% discount.
Yeah.
There's no coaching needed. Yep. On it right away.
That.
Exactly.
Well, especially when she gets 2% of every ticket.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's really. You're smarter than you look.
I've said that a few times.
So I think I've got a sketch out of SG.
Yeah.
Talk to me about SG, by the way. Why is it SG after being Sun Chaser or something?
Yeah, it was Sunglow.
Sunglow.
Huge mistake I made. So in 2016, when we were opening the first automotive shop in Lakewood.
Okay.
We didn't know a lot about the automotive side of the business. In fact, we knew way less than we thought we did also. But I was really worried about diluting the established, very professional commercial residential side of the business. Mm-hmm. So I had the brilliant idea of bringing
the
in a auto different
auto-only
brand.
Kind of brand.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, we were like, let's
spend a bunch of money, got some graphic designs done.
Denver Auto Tint. We're like, we're going to be in Denver. We're going to make it really easy for people to know.
All right.
This
SEO
brand.
Finding and stuff like that, right?
That's exactly what it was.
But we already had a great brand.
So it worked. That's it. It wasn't that it not worked. It's that then we grew. And then all of a sudden we have three brands.
Right.
And like, oh,
Fort Collins
so
Auto
confusing.
Tint, Denver Auto Tint.
So,
yeah, actually, the first time I visited your shop on Link Lane, it was Fort Collins Auto Tint.
Yeah. So I bit the bullet in 2000.
It's been a few
one,
years.
Or I'm sorry, 2021, 2022. And we all the collateral,
like
all the signs, all the things. It was when we were moving, actually, from Link to Jefferson. Like, I'm not going to pay for it.
I got to get new signs anyway.
Exactly.
And Danielle says, yep, that's great. Good decision.
Worked out great.
So it was, honestly, it was a rough year. It wasn't well timed with the new car sales market. There was no volume of new car sales right then.
Yeah.
We moved, we changed brands, and it was kind of a
skinny for a while.
Yeah, it was, man. But in hindsight, it was really good. You know, I call the term, I call it revenue development, like the whole function of generating leads in business.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought about it.
Right, it just
for
was kind of on
time.
Stable mode.
So we rebuilt our entire process, everything from AdWords to the follow-up process on the quotes that we sent
out.
And yeah, we are doing much better right now because of having now the brand's kind of reestablished, if you will, and we have all of these processes in place.
We have great people right now.
We have really good people.
I wrote a blog in February of 2020, bemoaning the fact in some ways that we hadn't had a recession in so long. And so the title of the blog was Trimming the Fat to Find What Businesses Really Love, Profit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, because we kind of got bloated as an economy for a long time. And then, you know, COVID didn't really help.
Yes, did you say February 2020?
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
Right before, I was like, we need a recession. Okay, granted.
That's hilarious.
So it's your fault.
Yeah, government-imposed recession.
Right, yeah.
But it also followed quickly, like within 45 days, it was like, here's 400,000 of PPP. You want it? You know, and all this just fluff and debit cards arriving by mail and stuff.
Right.
So that doesn't lead to trimming the fat.
No. In hindsight, it was bad I think the habits of businesses and how because it was, okay, we came out of this great time. Now there's all this money to
this fluff.
Exactly.
Well, now so many people are struggling with this post-COVID change of, like you had talked about earlier, where cost of goods and supplies have gone up. And, you know, everybody didn't have to adjust for any of that at the time. And so now you have to, and you were seeing it. I mean, even local with businesses closing and restaurants and stuff, but
100%.
It kind of changed how things worked. And
well, I'm looking forward painfully scared of what those EIDL loans. Like, I know so many people that have hundreds of thousands of dollars in balances and they no longer have a sustainable business.
Yeah.
You know, and those dollars really just kick the can down the road on making the changes that they needed to do to get sustainable for the most part. And now they got, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 of money. It's 30 years fixed at 3.25, but they still want you to pay it back, as it turns out.
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm going to say 34% non-collection rate on that idle program by the time the dust settles.
Wow.
That would be my guess.
And that's a program we didn't have a lot of experience with. It's not one that we really ever
put in. The PPP helped bridge some stuff and some pay some salaries and stuff like that. And
the intent of it was for, and what we used it for was keeping everybody employed. We did our best in the, I mean, when we were shut down and stuff, to not have to let anybody go. And if somebody wanted to take the time off, then we let them and stuff. But it was great to not. To be able to help support our staff in that time where they really needed it.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that was prudence on a business manager standpoint. And I took 25 grand of the economic injury disaster loan, is what they called it, because it was 30-year money at 3.25%.
Right. I'm like, oh, sure.
I'm going to put it in a CD.
Right.
And ultimately, it was a working capital cushion that allowed me to not really make good changes. Loco Think Tank has been mostly a barely over break-even organization for most of its life, and it just kind of allowed me to not try to get fit and healthy.
Sure.
You know, I didn't have to trim the fat because I had some extra fat from Uncle Sam for 30 years.
Right.
So Mold Removal Express, let's move on to that company.
Yep, super simple. So it's a niche mold remediation company that treats homes predominantly. We will treat commercial properties, but predominantly homes that are flagged during a real estate transaction for having mold. Most common scenarios is small area under a sink, large area in poorly ventilated attic or crawl space.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the concept.
Also, just not a full house mitigation, more of like a spot fix.
That's exactly it. So it's mold isn't an insurable event on its own.
Mm.
It is covered under homeowner's insurance if it's a part of a
if it floods
or something like
that. As long as it wasn't your own plumbing.
Exactly. Yep.
Kind of thing.
So we no insurance chasing. We've never done work for an insurance company and probably never will, frankly.
Yeah.
This is all John selling his house, and the inspector flags mold because his attic is poorly ventilated.
Yep.
Is it a problem? Yeah. Is it a big problem? No. Does John need it taken care of and taken care of quickly? Yep. And that's the whole model. The process is very simple. It works. It's just an EPA registered chemical that kills not only the mold, but the mold in the area. So the house has to be vacant.
And future little mold spores kind of thing.
Exactly.
A little bit.
Neutralizes all that. Actually works good for like allergens and stuff like that. We don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
The niche is really properties in the middle of real estate transactions. We have a growing niche of John finds mold under a sink and he's freaked out about it.
Yeah.
And we'll come and we tell him he can deal with it himself. In fact, if you read the reviews on it, our partner talks half of our potential customers out of doing business with us. But partly because it is so easy to deal with. But if John's freaked out about it, we come and kill the spot of mold and tell him it's gone, and it is gone.
$300 or $500 or
$800 depending on the situation. If it's a whole attic or crawl space, it's $3,000 basically. But it can be done literally tomorrow.
Wow.
And
interesting.
So we own 60% of that company. 40% of it is owned by the operators. They brought us the idea 11 years ago. And
they just needed some capital and some back end support.
Yeah.
And it could be a real business.
Running a business is hard. We know how to run a business. They know how to operate that side. So it was a good partnership from that front.
They had built it actually large and very quickly and flamed out very quickly.
Gotcha.
And they said, hey, we know this is an idea. Look at these.
We got all these customers.
Exactly.
We just didn't make any money on them.
Yeah. And we don't know how to insure it. We don't know how to, organize it, set it up, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So we did invest the capital, but it was a shockingly low amount of capital.
Yeah. Didn't take a lot of infrastructure.
No.
And what's your role with mold removal, Danielle?
Yeah, I mean, 100% accounting again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just strictly back
end. I do all of our
HR or anything in that space?
No, that one, I mean, all we have on that one, we've got a couple subcontractors and then
just as
me and one of the other are both employees, so we've got, when it comes to all that payroll side of things. But from the HR standpoint, it's nothing like the flower shops where you've got 100 employees. So,
right.
So
and you're hiring three people a month just to stay at 100 employees.
Yeah. So a lot of that is I just a lot more invoicing, making sure everybody's staying on track, watching the money, being, you know, more of a CFO and watching that hire and stuff on that one. So
even supply costs and different things like that.
Yeah. Just, you know, if we're going to be doing a big expense, getting it approved and looking through all of that and seeing where is the best way to do it and how. And, you know, our partners with that are so good about it. But yeah, I kind of take a hire and standpoint on that and do a little bit more of what I do enjoy, which is accounting.
It's stupid simple, Kurt. It's the simplest business on the planet. And I mean, I say that in jest, but it really is very, very simple. And we've intentionally kept it that way, and it's worked well.
You serve the same role kind of there where you feed leads is a lot of your role. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of CEO visionary, but also chief marketing officer is what I'm kind of picking up, Tim.
Yeah, and moving away from marketing as a task or as a
More of a strategy and have somebody else execute.
Yep. In fact, we brought in ad agencies at both SG and MRE in the past 6 months.
Oh, wow.
It was one of those realizations of, hey, 8 years ago, you were an expert when it comes to AdWords.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you're not.
Right.
Today, you can. You
and 8 years ago, you were willing to spend 10 hours a week trying to figure it out.
Exactly.
And now you're not.
Right. So
if that can take it to the next level.
Yeah, which it has. I've spent, for probably the previous 7 years, I've spent a total or an average of 3 hours a month on that business.
Oh, wow.
And it's gone fine, and profit margin is strong and consistent. But the last 6 months I've spent, you know, 10 times that basically. And we're seeing those results of me applying more of a kind of a visionary type of approach to it. Sales are up 100% so far for the first two months of this year. So,
I thought you said you were stepping out a little bit more, but
stepping sideways into a different role.
Yeah.
What's happened over the past like 6 to 9 months for me in my career is I'm starting to realize that I am more of a visionary. I wasn't 10 years ago.
That's shocking news to me.
I've been telling you, she said something like that.
He's an idea man.
Yeah.
So, and visionary in the sense of like EOS, like traction.
Yeah. And so trying to intentionally get more of the fluff off of you.
Mm-hmm.
And Danielle, do you play that role of integrator in some respects, or is that somebody else in your organization?
Yeah, that's usually not me.
Different people at different businesses, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're real close to bringing on a full-time integrator at SG, who will just chief responsibility will be to manage all of those day-to-day integrator type of situations.
Mm-hmm.
And the relief and the excitement that gives me, like thinking through what that means is awesome.
Danielle, I have a story and a compliment for you. You probably know I've been like chasing Tim, you know, slowly for Loco Think Tank for years. And maybe he shared this story with you. If I'm redundant, then I shouldn't, but I bet he hasn't. And the last time we got together for lunch, you know, I'm a slow flirt. Like I don't come on strong. Right. But it's like, you know, and I was like, you know what, you seems like you're just not too interested. And his response really was, you know, me and Danielle have been partners and peers in this whole journey. Yeah. And I feel like that's just kind of the way it is. We are each other's safe place.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And place to seek wisdom and feedback and perspective. And I feel like if I was in like a Loco Think Tank chapter, then it would like have this imbalance with me and Danielle and whatever, and I'm served well by the relationship that we have.
We're super lucky.
Something like that.
I usually don't do these types of things. I get so nervous. Oh my God. Like you should have seen me walking in this door. I was so nervous. Tim's like, you need to calm down. I just don't I get nervous.
We should have had some whiskey then.
I know,
where's
right?
Wine glass?
Yeah. I know, instead I drink more caffeine. So he usually does this. He does the talking side of us for both of us usually. Yeah. And I try and do more, I guess, the thinking side. And then I'll tell him my opinions. I have no problem with that. But
no, she's very good at that.
Yeah. No, but we're excited.
He's always been very honoring of your
Thank
role.
You. That's
and
awesome.
And that to me was, you know, even though I've love to have, I'd rather have another member, honestly, and you guys could sort it out, but
we're both very blessed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, as our careers have developed, you know, me as the visionary and the kind of face at the beginning was super important.
Yeah.
Her role and skills have become honestly more important than what I do it. And
right. Well, and as you get older and you have littles and stuff, you're more risk averse too. Yep. So yep. her yeah. skill set is more useful yep. in that I, time.
Yeah. Spiro Palmer said it to me 100 times. He said, I convinced you, but I really wanted Danielle.
Right. I thought you could grow it, but I knew she wouldn't let you wreck it.
Right.
Oh, man. It's ridiculous.
Let's jump back just to the before SG days, like 2009, and just set the stage of that getting into business zone. And let's just hear about what those prompts were, or what that season of life was.
2009, we were in college. We're at CSU. Tim was an entrepreneur, wanted to do a business.
All the things.
I was at the bank at that time, I believe. Yeah, we and were I think 19. You were selling cars.
Okay.
He convinced me that we should buy a business. yeah. So we went all in. We looked at a ton of different things, had no idea what we wanted to do. Found a Sunglow window tint. We met with a couple bankers, and then we ended up meeting with the banker who we still bank with today. I love him. Well, he will always have our business.
You can say his name.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris Burns.
Especially if you're saying nice things.
Yeah,
like that.
Chris Burns, Bank of Colorado.
Yeah, Chris has been around for a long time.
And he gave us a chance.
A lot of relationships like that, actually.
He's amazing. He gave us a chance when we were young and had no experience. And this day, like.
So you're literally like a second year accounting student at this time.
Mm-hmm. Well, at this time, I wasn't even. Gosh, so okay. So was that sophomore?
Were you still going to be a psychiatrist at that time?
No, I changed that real quick. turns out I don't do great talking to people.
I don't understand. I'm not sure that's true.
So we were in the school business. I don't even know if we had declared what we wanted within the business yet. Because I had no idea about accounting. I was finance at first, and then I took my first accounting class, and then from that point, I just loved it. It came super easy and kind of just went down that path.
You started talking to bankers, found a business you wanted to buy, got an SBA loan, all your no assets to speak of on the line.
That's exactly what it was.
Title to your car.
There was a couple interesting things that happened. One is I got a car sales job in Albuquerque, New Mexico, literally on my 18th birthday.
Okay.
And as an introvert, it was super scary, but as somebody who was willing to work their ass off, it worked out all right. And so our income level shot to a pretty high degree on our own, or to a pretty high level on our own.
I had a college buddy that was making like 60K, working 10 hours a week selling cars, and I was like, what
and
the
our
hell?
Apartment that we were living in at that point was like 400 and something dollars.
Right. So all of a sudden you're saving a bunch of money.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what we're making, $60,000 to $80,000 a year. And I wasn't working 10 hours a week, I was working 50, but that's how it worked.
A crazy time. You were working a ton. We were both in school full time. We were working, and we were making our own way. We both moved up here with $2,000 in our bank accounts each, I think, and kind of just moved in together and merged it together. Actually moved in and just kind of stayed. I was supposed to go to the dorms, and
You boyfriend and girlfriend before this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We started dating in high school.
Okay.
And so we moved up here. I just kind of never left. I never really got invited to move in. Just kind of invited myself and never really went anywhere.
Then I would say like a year into car sales here, somebody put rich dad, poor dad, like that old cliche. But I mean, when you're 18, 19 years old, that does what it's supposed to do. And we kind of took that to heart a little bit. And we struck out on many businesses. But honestly, once we found Chris Burns and just like the way that he looked at us and the confidence that he instilled in us.
That's cool.
Yeah. Buying SG was a very small amount of money in hindsight, but it was a lot of money for us.
Right. Well, I am over the years, I did a lot of startup lending and things like that. And even just with Loco Think Tank development, I, I like to say my special talent is identifying special talent.
Nice.
And Chris has had that same reputation as well. Like, you just get a feel.
Yeah.
You know, and today's world, bankers don't get to make decisions like that much. Mm-hmm. Not nearly as much. It's part of why I'm no longer a banker. But, but it's really kind of a neat thing to be able to evaluate. Do these people have the perseverance, the intelligence, the can-do, the willingness to do this hard thing?
We that's a big part of our story is the people that surrounded us from a service provider perspective.
Yeah.
They're some of the highest performers in, you know, the city in Colorado at this. Yeah. And we got a little bit fortunate from that. You know, it takes,
just kind of
takes
fell
luck,
into exactly. some of those. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yep.
So, but yeah, that's how we closed in 2009, 2010. And it was fun. We had a blast.
Well, it sounds like you had a series of events after that. But before we get there, we're going to jump in the time machine and go all the way back to like first grade.
Okay.
Where Danielle, where were you
In
first grade?
First grade, I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, born and raised. Let's see, what school would have been?
Like in the city?
Yeah, in the city. Chaparral Elementary, actually.
Oh, nice job. Nice
road
job.
Roadrunners.
Roadrunners.
Yeah. So just in Albuquerque.
Tell me about like your family. Do you have siblings?
Yeah,
were your folks in business?
Yeah. So, my mom and dad, got married and they both have a child from prior relationships. So I have two half sisters who are just completely amazing. And then, they got pregnant. Actually me and my brother, I have a twin
twinkie.
Brother.
Okay.
Yeah. So me and my brother came into their lives and I have two sisters and a brother, nieces, nephews now. Yeah. And
so most of your family is still down
there? Yeah, most of my family is in Albuquerque. My oldest sister is in Oregon. And I remember so first grade, I actually already had a niece because my oldest sister is 15 years older than me.
Yeah.
And so I remember being in like kindergarten and I would say about my niece or something and people would be like, you don't have a niece. There's no way you do. It's a cousin or something else. And I remember just being so confused at that point. Turns out I had a niece and she's amazing. She actually just had her first baby about a month ago and she's just the cutest little girl.
What a cool thing.
Yeah. So I have a great family. My dad is an entrepreneur, had a business when I was younger.
Okay.
What
kind of business, am I right?
Yeah, so he used to import wood from Mexico into like moldings and stuff.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do that anymore. He's since retired. He was just,
yeah, but you got to see that as you were growing up and stuff.
Yeah, I got to see that and just how hard he worked. And he is just an amazing provider and just the best dad in the world.
By the way, while I'm thinking about it or remembering it myself, my best friend growing up was my dad's youngest brother, who was 20 years younger. So we were in the same grade.
Yeah.
It was like a half thing. So it's like uncle cousin thing.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, I digress. Tim, same question. First grade, where are you?
Yeah, I was in the city of Albuquerque also.
You were?
We had just moved from Moab, Utah to Albuquerque.
Yeah.
We were on one side of Albuquerque and then moved to the side where I predominantly grew up on. Mm-hmm. And we actually went to the same, Danielle and I went to the same elementary school.
Oh, is that right?
Fifth grade.
Okay.
It's the only time we went to the same school.
Are you guys
school.
The same age? Same
She's a little older than me.
I'm 9 months older than
you. Well, you look far younger, for the record.
I always take that opportunity.
I knew you were going to say that the second you asked.
What was your scene, your family situation, siblings, and what had people living in Moab in the first place and moving to Albuquerque?
Yeah. I have two elder half-siblings, so I was the youngest. My mom and dad were always separated as long as I remember.
Okay.
But a super positive relationship.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like
cool.
In a way that as I've aged, I've come to appreciate so much how challenging that is. And they
nailed it.
Oh my God.
Even
so
the co-parenting
day,
thing, right? Whatever.
To this day, your mom and your stepmom will talk on the phone for an hour.
That's cool.
It's a great relationship.
Yeah.
So, but that informed a lot of just how I grew up. My mom was an amazing provider. She,
You grew up mostly with your mom?
Almost 100%.
Wow.
Yep. I spent really very little time with my dad. He was lived here in Fort Collins.
Okay.
And we lived in Albuquerque till I moved to Fort Collins. I had not spent more than, I don't know, a week.
And did most of the kids in Albuquerque, like, want to go to Fort Collins for college when they, if they could? Or is that,
no,
it seems like it would be kind of normal.
I feel like a lot of people in New Mexico end up staying in New Mexico because the state actually, the state lottery.
Tuition's almost
goes,
free kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, so for college down there, it's mostly covered. So you don't see a whole lot of out of state unless they're in a, like the WUI program or something different like that.
Sure.
Well, UNM is an amazing school. It just happens to be in a not very great place. But and even NMSU is an amazing STEM tech engineering school. So, but no, I spent quite a bit of time growing up just because my dad was here in Fort Collins. I never even looked anywhere else. I was just, I was always coming to CSU. I think I had always like dreamed of going to Duke, so I applied to Duke to see if I could get in. But that was the only other school I applied to.
Tell me about, tell me about small Danielle. You seem like a straight A student. People try to cheat off of you all the time.
Maybe a valedictorian.
Valedictorian of a, how big a class?
Oh, not very big. What, 68 people or so? It was a small. I went to a private Christian
school.
That's
still pretty good, though.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. No, I had a. I'm a
high achieving.
I like to do things well. Like to do. I'm a perfectionist. This day. I went to a private Christian school, me and my brother. Hope Christian is an amazing school. We were super fortunate to go there.
Were you an athlete?
I do volleyball. Even like last night I had a volleyball game. So that was my big thing in high school, and I mean I was all the things too. I did like I was a yearbook nerd.
Debate team, whatever. I don't know. But
yeah,
all the things.
Yeah. Just as much as all as much as I could do. I've always tried to do my best and be a high achiever. That's just kind of how I'm wired. I would. In high school, I was a manager at a pizza restaurant. Actually, we worked together. And that's where we started dating. And so I would leave very often. I'd leave school about half hour early, go to work. And
nobody cared because you had straight A's all the time anyway.
Yeah, as long as I was doing good. So I'd go to work and I'd be there till about midnight. And then on the weekends, I would get up at 5 or 6 a.m., go do opening. And so it was a busy time. When you're younger, you just do it.
It's easier. I think
of it now, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much. But that's just kind of how my brain functions. That's how I've always kind of gone through.
On and off, like gas pedal down or coasting, but fairly rarely.
Yeah,
breaks.
I'm not very idle.
I'm guessing you might not have been to the same private school thing. You just found this cute Christian girl at the pizza shop.
Our paths crossed a few times growing up between school. I didn't know her in fifth grade, but I knew her twin brother. In fifth grade. And we had some mutual friends in middle school.
Oh, wow.
We actually went trick-or-treating together in like seventh grade.
Yes.
Randomly.
And then, then we started working both very young. We were both, you know, as about as early as you could start working. You know, as a couple months before we turned 16. So we, and we worked there till I got the car sales job. So, 2.5 years together. So yeah, we had a whole kind of evolution of, there are pictures of junior prom where we went with the same group of people with different people. And then pictures at our senior prom where we are there
actually
together.
There together.
We had a really good friendship for a long time prior to actually dating.
Let me guess. You wanted to date, but you were too scared, and it took you a year or so of him warming you up and showing that he's a good guy.
Nope.
Not vice versa.
She asked me out.
I did ask you out, but we were both in. I mean, we were friends for so long. We were both in relationships, prior, and just from working together, we had a lot of closing shifts together. So we were just that friendship built, and. And he was in a relationship, or I was in a relationship or something. And then I did finally ask him out when we both were not in a relationship.
Well, that's better than when you were not in a relationship and he was in one.
Yeah, no, it's timing.
I'm not giving you a license
for that. Timing just all worked out right before senior year we started dating. And
And were you excited to come to Fort Collins when he announced
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so I was a little opposite than him. I did apply to a bunch of schools, got into a ton of schools, and then kind of had a decision. I knew I wanted to go out of state. Since I can remember, I'd always wanted to venture out and try something new. Had looked at CSU, and actually wasn't one of my favorite schools. CU was one of my I really liked CU, and I really liked Arizona just in general.
Sure.
And so when he decided to come out here, you know, kind of reevaluated everything, and I did end up being that girl that followed.
It's okay.
And if my daughter did that to this day, I would absolutely kill her. I mean, we'd only been dating for 9 months at that point. When I think about, like, the millions of ways that it should have gone wrong and normally would, I don't recommend it. For us, it definitely worked out, and we're so blessed that it did.
You know, if you're sailing in Providence, kinda then
crazy.
It just works sometimes.
We were at a different level of maturity between the amount of time that we worked, not just worked together, but we were working professionals basically that point. We had some things going on in our family that had caused us to be to mature both independently and different. They're not the same things, we were much more capable of or much closer to adulthood than your typical 18-year-old.
That doesn't surprise me.
And we didn't really know that, you know, at that time. But some people around us did and kind of allowed it to happen. So we bought a house 9 months after we got here. Wow. We were married like about a year after that.
Poor dad, you bought a business in the second year of school.
Gosh, I think we even combined our finances when we were living. We had barely moved in together.
You're all like, these things here, take all my money. I don't like to do stuff with my money.
It's just kind of always been easy. More. I think we've just always had that trust and it kind of just bloomed from there.
Well, and it probably was there most of the way there 1 month in instead of 9 months in is my suspicion, or two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a big event that happened really early on in our relationship. We were going to go to a movie with some friends, and there was a line of three cars. I was in the back. Danielle was driving her truck in the center, and then some friends in front. And a drunk driver in a 70s Suburban crossed the line and almost hit our friends, who were able to get off the road and then hit Danielle head on.
Oh, my.
We were a month into our senior year of high school.
Oh.
And I witnessed it. It was... It changed the trajectory of our relationship, just of our lives, really, in a lot of ways. It changed the trajectory of our lives.
For
a couple of things. One, Tim pulled me out of the car, which was just, I still have back pain to this day to deal with it. But two, Tim was actually going to break up with me that night.
Oh, God.
I wasn't going to tell that part of the story, but that's okay. Fine.
I was still kind of into somebody else, and so he was going to end it. And so God intervened a little bit by...
Yeah, then he pulls you out of the car. You're like, my hero. I hate that loser.
So it kind of all worked out, but it did change things a lot. Not reestablished, but just hardcore established a lot of trust and love there, and so
reassessment.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
change a lot of things.
I want to come back to college because we're getting close to that point we jumped off. But I'm going to call a quick break, and then we'll be back.
This episode is sponsored by Loco Think Tank. Loco Think Tank provides peer collaboration for business owners. We build smart, safe places to help business leaders navigate every stage of the business journey, and we love what we do and who we do it with. Our model features give-back-minded business veterans in the role of Loco facilitators, and we're always looking for abundance-minded individuals to add to our membership, facilitator team, Loco community, or to feature on this podcast. Listeners of this podcast who go on to become members of Loco Think Tank get their 6th month of membership for free. Just mention the Loco Experience podcast on your application. To learn more, visit our website at locothinktank.com. That's locothinktank.com.
So we kind of got back to where we jumped off from your journey there. So you'd acquired this window business, at least in part because you showed a bunch of income from being a damn good car salesman.
Sure.
All that stuff. And then what was the next kind of entrepreneurial thing? Or was that after college then?
No, we were continuing on that path.
Okay.
There was a... a life event that happened kind of sequentially to our acquisition of Sunglow, and I was courted by a Fortune 500 agricultural company to be in sales management for them, which was a bachelor position. I still have like two and a half years left in my bachelor's. But I tried to sell who ended up being a mentor of mine, the car. It was unsuccessfully bought it from somebody else.
Yeah.
But
he was like, man, I want to hire this guy to go sell farm equipment for me?
Yep. Corn seed, soybean seed, alfalfa seed, all that kind of stuff.
Ginger Graham started in that same kind of work.
Oh, really?
Although she sold chemicals. She was an ag economics person.
We would have been kind of side by side then in that space. But so that the particular entity went on a hiring freeze during my second portion of my interview process.
Okay.
And so right about that time is when we started working on SG deal, and they both ended up happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. We closed on Sunglow in like 1 month later, which I'd been waiting for 9 months for this offer letter to come in. The offer letter came in, salary, completely flexible schedule, brand new truck, drive as much as you want, good insurance, like
and
all
Daniel's
the things.
And Daniel's like, you cannot not take
so
that job.
I left the bank and I started doing stuff for Sunglow, and
so you
he took that job.
Maybe not even finished your degree, but you were working at a bank doing tellering, new accounts, kind of stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
We would have been between sophomore and junior year in college at this time. Yeah.
So, but you were getting $20 an hour or 18 or something like that, and Tim was being offered a lot more. And so,
oh yeah, it made a lot more sense. Yeah, that, I mean, we even sat down and talked about it because he's the entrepreneur in our, like, he's got the entrepreneurial heart. And so I remember sitting down and we were talking about it, but it just made so much more sense for him to take this other great opportunity and for me to do the business.
Right.
And
well, and I bet probably you're a better numbers girl because of that experience doing the whole thing.
I would say so. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think we both are better for those experiences.
Right.
My time in the corporate world where I got elite level training.
Totally.
I was put in very uncomfortable and challenging situations.
Right.
I, like all of these things. And Danielle's time as being the sole, you know, operator of this business. We almost like flipped planned roles for a while.
Yeah.
With the concept of flipping back at some point.
Right, right.
So we were looking at gas stations and dry cleaners all across the country, the state, to be the next target for our acquisition. But we had money for college kids, but there's no like slush fund back here.
Well, and nobody, like, it was just that ESG was that easy or something.
Yeah, it was
that
easy.
Was part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean, because people look at the idea of starting a business or buying a business, and a lot of people are just super intimidated.
Business is hard. I mean, it is intimidating, and it kind of should be. There's a lot of, especially in Colorado, there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through, and there's a lot of regulatory things that have to happen. So you do want to go into it cautiously, but it's not, doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It just means you need to educate yourself as much as possible.
Yeah, fair.
And for us, when we were looking for another business, we were busy, but we were looking for something that was maybe going to require a lot less time.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking at things like a gas station or like a coin-operated laundromat where we wouldn't have to necessarily put in a ton
of
time.
Pretty more mailbox money-ish kind of businesses.
Yeah, and we had done...
Theoretically.
We had just started dabbling in rentals. I think we had our first rental at that point. So we were just looking for more ways to increase our wealth overall for long-term.
Yeah. Felt like you could grow a business faster than you could grow a real estate value ultimately.
Yeah, or why not do both, really?
Right, right.
So at that point, I mean, like Tim said, we had money for being in college, but realistically, now that I look at it, we didn't have anything.
Not to acquire assets.
Right. No. And so,
well, today's debt is tomorrow's equity.
Right.
Which we kind of took that
approach. That's what we did a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
To answer the question, I think... because of our similar overall outlooks, but different ways of getting there, operating a business came more naturally to us together as a group
or as
a team, as opposed to how a lot of people find it individually or from different different walks of life. We were also in the middle of business school at that time,
right?
Which, as you get to that point in business school, a lot – you can end up in what seems like abstract concepts, and we were living it. Yeah, you're applying
these concepts every day.
Well, we would be taking classes. We would opt to take a class that we knew would help us. So if we had an option of four different classes, we would choose one. I'd be like, well, this actually pertains to us. Yeah. So it made it a lot easier.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, and that's exactly what it was. But to buy mailbox money or quote-unquote mailbox money, you have to have assets.
Right. We
did not have assets to do that. So we...
An operating business that you have to turn the cranks and pull the levers is a lot more manageable to acquire.
Exactly, for sure, especially with SBA opportunities out there. We got pitched a flower shop a few times, said no a couple of times on it. It took a big price reduction.
Even way back when?
Uh-huh, yep.
Oh, how did Spiro stumble upon you?
It wasn't Spiro.
Different. A flower shop.
There was one flower shop that was for sale. It's actually the Loveland location. And... we were like, no, we have no desire to do that.
Business looked hard.
And then we ended up, the numbers worked, so we reevaluated.
And they gave us an option to buy the real estate, which we could not do at the time of purchase.
Right.
But they had it was two or three years left on the lease, and they said, hey, you'll have an option at lease turn. And we exercised that option. Ended up being a fantastic deal. But that was kind of the tipping point.
Yeah.
Got into the flower business.
And was this the flower shop that later got acquired by Palmer's or something to make the Loveland location or no?
We merged with Palmer's, bringing that in the Boulder location, which again is no longer part of Palmer Flowers, but we brought those two in and did a merger.
Didn't realize that.
Yep. It was a merger and a leverage buyout is a reasonably complex transaction that we did at that time. But there was then, to this point in our lives, it's been pretty analytical and systematic. And that's not what happened the first month of the flower shop. We fell in love with it. We loved the people, many of whom still work for us.
Wow.
We up until last Friday, I guess. But
what was your brand?
Forever Flowers. Yeah.
Oh. Really. Okay. It's that location. It's that weird corner, that European corner
where
you cross traffic. And the owner that we bought it from they were actually a Flowerama franchise. Yeah.
Oh.
And they sued Flowerama about 2 years before we acquired it to get out of the franchise agreement.
Oh, interesting.
Because they were aware of the eminent domain.
I'd heard about that.
Opportunity or likely eminent domain. They did not disclose it, and so they'd remove themselves from Flowerama. Did a reasonably poor job of rebranding, but they had a great corner and a great
a lot of traffic, visibility, reputation, a lot of long-time established customers, all that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
and probably not very good marketing skills in the digital economy.
Yep. But at the same time, what we didn't know was how complicated the supply chain was. Literally,
should have actually took a couple more supply chain classes, as it turns out.
It was a lot.
So that was trial by fire. We also didn't know what it was that not every. We were pretty tech savvy. We thought every business was technically adept at that point. She was operating off carbon copy tickets. So for Valentine's Day, we would write out these carbon copy 3-layer tickets. We'd do 300 deliveries in 7 hours.
Right.
So there was 900 water-soluble pieces of paper flying
around. At first Valentine's Day, I think I delivered something at 9 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
It was brutal. We just had no idea what we were doing.
Did you guys... Had you started a family then? Because you got a couple of littles.
So this would have been 2012. Yeah. 12. So at that point, we switched. We were in the middle of switching. I had just gotten my master's from CSU.
Okay.
And I was in process of studying for my CPA exam. Mm-hmm. Got that done that summer. I think the same summer that we acquired the flower shop.
That sounds right.
And then you left your agricultural sales kind of thing?
Which I loved. It was they took such good care of me. And they were just, it's a great organization.
Yeah.
No
hard feelings, but I gotta be me.
I saw very quickly the typical corporate structure issues. I had been through two reorgs, one of which I'd seen somebody who was way better than me at my job get, demoted three layers just out of politics, basically. Wow. And then I had some good mentors that said, hey, I remember this very, very clearly. He said, you can stay in Fort Collins and build your own little empire in Fort Collins and be the man there, or you can move all over the world and do all these big things with this company.
I'm like, I'd rather be poor in Fort Collins than rich all over the world.
And he wasn't saying that. He was saying you have to make a choice here. And that choice was super clear. Like that was the moment. That's like, nope, it's time to switch gears and become a full-time entrepreneur.
My father-in-law really grew up with John Deere Corporation. Mm. So, and he's like literally the oldest employee of John Deere right now. Cool. He retired at 55 years ago, and then he worked for Frontier Equipment. Nice. But my wife, Jill, grew up, she was born in Yuma, Arizona. They lived in Idaho just before that. Then they lived in Portland area. Then they lived in Iowa and then Minneapolis area. Yep. And, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It was very clear. Yeah. We didn't have a family. We were married. We'd been married a few years at that point. We were planning to have a family. But if I remember the conversation correctly, Danielle said, I've moved 500 miles from my family for you. I'm not moving any further. And not to say that I really wanted to. We were unpacking, you know, what just that decide meant what we for wanted. Our family.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just her way of saying, I don't really want to like live 5 years at a time all over the world.
Well, and I'm super close with my family. So having Albuquerque just a half day away or a couple hour plane ride by the time you get there, like that to me is the farthest I ever want to be.
Yeah, I
don't want to be farther than that from them. I love the idea of being able, like, if there's an emergency, I can get there you know, pretty quick. They mean everything to me. So wasn't happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy in these business discussions to get caught up in what's the right, most efficient next move. At the end of the day, we talk about the success we've had in our partnership, both personally and business-wise. That takes mutual fulfillment, and it takes a give and a take 100% of the time to get there. And that's probably been the secret sauce to our success professionally and personally, is there's been this mostly effortless give and take, where there's been times where I've kind of led the charge. There's been times where her and what she wants has led the charge, and it takes that kind of back
continuous
and
conversation.
Kind of say communication, so much communication. Yeah. And I mean, it's hard to work with your spouse, but also in so many ways, it's almost so easier, because we've always been super open and honest about communicating things, and especially when it comes to like finances and so just some of that, being able to communicate that within the business, it never really was a difficult thing for us because we are already doing that within our relationship and our marriage. And so I mean, you have different fights for sure, where I don't agree with something he did within the business, or how he spoke to somebody, or vice versa, he doesn't agree with how I did something. And so you just have to be able to work through that. He's a lot better about not bringing it home than I am.
Yeah.
But he's also really good about trying to pull me out of that. So
I'm thinking about sometimes there's just a difference of opinion. Like when the cat's 100%. When the cat's on the table when I'm eating dinner, the cat gets smacked off the table.
Sure.
Jill thinks that's never okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's just a dumb cat. She doesn't know any better. Well, she'll learn if she gets smacked enough times.
Yeah, I would say
it's just a difference of values in some ways.
Especially after the past 3 months where we've had to have some really hard discussions, make some really hard decisions. There are times there's just reasonable people can disagree. And that's the same, especially when you work with your spouse, you run into that. But
wow, what a concept in today's world that reasonable people can disagree.
Yes. It's one of the bigger challenges in times anything. We live in.
Of communication right now.
Part of the foundation of my podcast is that it's okay to disagree and talk about hard topics.
And that's
why
you have to be able to talk about it. And like I said, I am not the best about that. I tend to shut down, and I need to have a day or so to come back to it.
Yeah.
And we've kind of worked through that at this point where we can do that, but you have to be able to listen to both sides, whether you like it or not. And
in the meantime, Tim's like a confront the dragon guy.
Oh my
god! He's like, let's finish 100%. This.
I will tell you the hardest
check
part.
Check the box. I can move on.
Literally, the hardest part of being married is that he wants to talk about it then, and I'm like, I cannot talk about this now. We need to do this at a different time.
Yeah, yeah.
I need a moment.
My wife is very much the same, and she's that kind of organized personality, and she'll just be like, I mean, like, well, what? And she's like, give me a minute. Like, it takes me more than 1 second to respond. Yes. Like, yeah. I get that you can respond to every situation in like a half a millisecond.
Oh, but I'm that's making checklists my brain works. In my brain right. that I need to be able to make go sure through how this. I'm going to speak about it. Like, yeah. if he's going to respond to this, how am I going to respond this other way? So,
yeah. yeah, there's no planning in my world what I'm going to say next. It just happens.
Yeah, 100%. So,
I don't know what it's like, guys. It's hard.
So that became a really clear, but it worked really beautifully for us. Yeah. So we had this one flower shop, we had the window tinting business. Right about that same time, we were presented with the concept of Mold Removal Express, which it was too good to say no to, and it's the best investment we ever made. Thank God we did it. But so we did that. And then this other flower shop, we needed just a little bit more to confidently replace my income.
Right, right.
Because they were all tiny, right? All these things are little bitty things at this point. And Danielle was wrapping up, headed towards a career, but wasn't there yet.
Okay.
So we'd identified this one flower shop in Boulder that we really, really liked. And at not the most opportune time, it came for sale, but we pulled it together, did the deal, and
Chris Burns stretched for you a little bit.
Always.
Oh, he's amazing.
that pulled me out of corporate, and really gave me this full-time entrepreneurial view of our life.
And that allowed me to go into corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you go?
I was at an accounting firm for a while.
You talk about them?
It was Keiko Isom. They're awesome. So he was coming out of agriculture, and I went into actual agricultural accounting, where we were, at tax accounting. I loved it. It's such a fun industry.
Really?
I do.
Oh, my God.
You're the one.
You're
the sicko.
to this day, somebody asked me a tax question, and I just light up. I'm such a nerd.
And Keiko Isom was a part of that. I mean, they're a great organization. They're
great trainers, all that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was...
Which you got that same kind of dose of, hey, I'm getting all these skills poured into me that it would be hard to get otherwise.
Well, it helped so much when I was working with my clients because I could talk to them as a business owner to business owner, and I could understand the hardships they were going through, and I could answer a lot of their other questions. Whereas some people, I mean, it's just some small stuff, even just how you have to register within your county and register your business.
Different licenses and
things
like that.
And most people didn't have any, they've never done. And so I could go into that and do it confidently and guide them the right way. Loved that job. To this day, that is one, they were so good. Their work-life balance, they really focused on it. And we were there when we had our little one. They let me go part-time. They even gave me like an extra month on my maternity leave.
Wow.
They were just amazing. Yeah, they're super great.
Well, they don't find that many high-achieving, task-oriented people with like you that actually have common sense and street skills.
Yeah, it was really fun organization to work for.
It's fun to unpack this particular part of our life because, you know, we decided we didn't really want to be in the corporate world.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting that we worked for these amazing entities that took such great care of us and were mentors and lifelong friends and all those kinds of things. But it just wasn't for us.
Yeah. And so you got this Boulder flower shop secured, and this is what, circa 2015, 17?
14.
No, 14.
Yeah, early 14. Yeah, late 13, early 14.
13.
And then so we were kind of good. We're like, we want to be in three industries. Mm-hmm. We got our three industries. I got two flower shops. They're a bit to deal with. Window tinting business is starting to grow.
Had you opened the Fort Collins location of that yet?
No, still only commercial residential at that time. So we were kind of doing our thing. We had three, four rentals at that time. And then Spiro Palmer found us. He was actually, he didn't tell me this till years later. He was sizing us up for competition. He was going to open a shop literally next door to us.
Okay.
So he had Michelle Adams who...
Yeah, come do some secret shopping and stuff.
No, she called me up and said, hey, we want to have coffee. Oh. So, great. And I didn't know really who he was at that time. I'm still, I'm 25,
right.
26.
Yeah, at that point,
I remember being, no offense, but kind of shocked. I'm like, Spiro's selling to this kind of punk kid, rookie-ish, but
100%.
He's a talent spotter, too.
So halfway through the coffee, he switched. And he said, hey, you guys are actually... the people.
Pretty
that
cool.
I've been
looking for somebody like you.
That's exactly what it was. So he came after
us. What a compliment and what a intuition. Like that's should be pulled out. Like Spiro's sense of actually shifting mid-conversation. From, am I going to push this guy off this corner or buy him?
Yep.
Oh, wait. No, I might want to sell to him.
Yeah.
He's
an amazing guy. And that, thinking back to that conversation specifically, he was so intuitive in that. And not to say that we were the perfect people for it, but we had the skills that he needed to allow his people to continue doing what they do well. And we could operate basically the rest of it.
Yeah,
and we loved the employee ownership.
Well, and you
concept.
Still loved flowers.
Mm-hmm.
You probably mm-hmm. still do.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So he courted us pretty aggressively after that point. So that would have been like April of 2014. Okay. We said no a couple times. Yeah.
Right.
Life was still moving
working
fast.
In your dream job still.
Yeah, I was at the job.
Second maternity leave coming up soon.
Yeah, I remember being in meetings with him where he's trying to initially try and buy our shops first and then offering us to take over his shops. And at the time, I remember my little one kicking inside my stomach, and she always kicked my ribs, so I had my hand on there, and he was always so concerned. He's always like, are you okay? And just big old belly in there.
So we held him off, honestly, for about 6 months, and come about September, he made a final offer that
his
we couldn't refuse.
His price sounded better by that time.
It did. And just the way we were
the
organizing
dynamics
things.
Of it.
Yeah, because it was complicated.
For sure.
Even in retrospect, it was complicated.
Because he had already made some of his employees owners also. So
we had to sell them not only on that deal and the right way to do it, but on the punk kid and his pregnant wife on running the business.
Right.
That they'd only ever worked for him,
right.
Quite literally.
For 20 years and more, for some cases.
Exactly.
Yeah, 30.
Yeah.
We're just looking through. We have some people who've been there since 1976.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Enough said.
Yeah. So that we ended up saying yes and getting it figured out, and it closed on January 1 of 2015 is when
that was kind
of the culmination of that acquisition phase our life. We'd been going up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. And this is the first time you've really sold much. Or a big thing.
Yeah, very, very little. We sold one flower shop in 2019 that didn't fit the portfolio. But outside of that, this was a unique experience.
So I think I've heard kind of your business superpowers to some extent is that you fill in each other's gaps very well.
Yeah.
You have a kind of a shared value system and vision for your own future as a couple, but different strengths toward getting there. What's the biggest chink in your armor? Didn't expect that question, did you?
Didn't expect that. biggest chink in our armor. I think that we have really focused on doing it together. We have not. We have amazing relationships all across Fort Collins, and we have really done everything as a two-person team for the most part. We have some operating partners, some people that are our partners that run the business, but they don't have any say into how we really manage things at the end of the day. And we probably could have taken, instead of 2 + 2 = 5, it may have equaled 7 or 8 based
four
on
4 + 4 might be 16
exactly based on some of the phenomenal relationships that we've had. It's the other thing that some people might say was a chink, depends on the day for me, but is we've been very methodical with how we've done this. It doesn't sound like it, but we could have gone faster, bigger, all those kinds of things, but the Danielle may not call that a chink in the armor, but she.
No,
but
that's what the way I designed it. She says,
"Yeah,
no, but that's fair.
We could have gotten bigger, but I don't know that in retrospect I have any regret relative to that. But
right. No, there's always bigger, right? Yeah. And it comes with risk. It comes with lifestyle choices, all that.
Right. Yeah.
So, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I think one of the reasons we haven't gone bigger is. Well, we had our little one in 2014, and wanting to make sure that we were both available for her and the time commitment to her. You know, if we would have stayed working how we did prior, then absolutely. But one of us always picks her up from school. Sorry, except for like today. But one of us generally picks her up from school, and she's the priority for us.
Yeah. So fair enough. Talk to me just a little bit more about this, like, sale transaction of Palmer Flowers and Paul Wood. Like, were you on the same page when that started to get real? Who was more enthusiastic or less? Was there a compromise in that conversation?
No, we were simpatico that there was no disagreement there. Yeah. It came on very quickly. It came on from a conversation, kind of some fact finding I did the group that ended up buying us had bought a large group in Albuquerque last year. Yeah. And I was doing some fact finding on some possible operational improvements. Mm-hmm. And so we were down there Thanksgiving of 2023, and I did some visiting, secret shopping of them.
Okay.
And that spurred a conversation with Kevin McCarthy. And it went so fast. It went from 12/5, so December 5th was the initial conversation. And really, we had some complexities at the very end that pushed it from 2-1 to 3-1.
Wow.
But
otherwise, it could have been like a 50-day close.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, that must be that's a testimony to your books, Danielle, for one thing.
That is true. The books, that was not, there was no questions with those. Those are clean.
Yeah. In a testimony to our team as a whole and to Spiro, how he set the business up, the business is clean.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There's no.
It had to be transparent for all these employee owners and things like that.
Exactly.
When they came out to visit to see if it was something they want to do, I mean, I cannot talk about how amazing our people are more, but we preach that to them from day one conversation. For me, my people are probably what's most important to me within this industry. And we've been going and pushing that. And then they came in, and I remember the day they were leaving, they were like, yeah, you guys are right. A lot of times we come in and people say how amazing their staff is, but yours actually really is just phenomenal. Every single one of them is just so talented in their own ways.
Yeah.
So that definitely helped.
Well, I think it, this isn't about the transaction, but I think the employee ownership component of the business kept us really culturally focused before company culture
employees
was a buzzword.
First, kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly. We
and had then no customers choice. And then the owners kind of.
Exactly. So that's not an overnight change.
Right.
And it doesn't improve the business overnight, but over time, it improves the talent of the people that you have on the team.
Yeah. Well, and it totally increases their willingness to look at it as a whole operation really examine their role.
Yeah.
Yep. So these last 3 months have just been wild. Everything from like hosting this, you know, CEO and president of the very large florist.
Right.
And they're,
30 times bigger than you or something.
Yeah,
or
50. They're huge.
Right.
We were a big acquisition for them, but.
Yeah. Yeah. But only because flower shops just don't get that big very
often.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So from hosting them, wining and dining them, touring them around to, gosh, I spent so much time with attorneys over the past 6 weeks and in negotiating the details of what ended up being very complicated is we have 5 landlords. So trying to get, they have a Harvard attorney on staff.
Right.
And they have a checklist of things that they need to see in their leases. And we have everything from very sophisticated landlords to mom and pop.
Carbon copy fiber, 3-layer carbon sheet. Least agreements.
So I ended up in the middle kind of brokering all of this conversation back and forth. Which everyone came on board with. It took a little bit longer.
It takes time because you want to do by everybody.
Yeah, that wasn't long anyway, you know.
Yeah, felt long.
Everybody must have felt it was win-win kind of situation in the end.
I think we got there. I really do. I think, I think it was a big thing for Spiro.
I'm sure.
You know, it's emotional.
Yeah, it was emotional for him.
Yeah.
It's emotional for everyone. I mean, once you're in this flower industry, like, You just, it's hard to explain how you can love working 70 hours during Valentine's Day week, but being able to deliver these flowers and having somebody who's just so excited, or you deliver to somebody who's grieving and they're able to like really grieve through those flowers or by sending them, like it's just a completely different emotion that that you just don't ever deal with in any other industry.
Do you want another hard question?
Sure.
Now that Palmer's and Paul Woods is not a local shop, if somebody's insistent on a local flower shop, who do you recommend?
I still will go with Palmer and Paul Wood. It's still local and people working there.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It's still family owned. I mean, I'll answer the question. I think the strongest flower shop in Fort Collins is Lace and Lilies. They actually have a national footprint when it comes to the quality of their event and wedding
design. Their supply chain and different things. Okay.
But I do truly feel like if you're wanting to do local, we've got local employees. We buy local. We support Fort Collins locally. Okay.
So keep going to Palmer Flowers and Paul Wood. So my wife and I met Cece, whatever her name is, I forget, but Cece's flower shop on Valentine's Day at New Belgium with her brand new completed truck. It was her first day out.
Nice.
And so that's, I'm kind of partial. I bought my flowers mostly from her lately because Palmer's didn't need my business the last few years. She definitely did, and she's making it. I think she's turning the corner.
I met with her very early on, and I met with her a few times over the years.
Talent spotter, right?
Yeah, she. I love that she came from the industry from a marketing and development background as opposed to a designer. We as florists could see it early on.
Fair.
But that's not where it's at now.
And, she's built her skill set and probably even hired some designers and things.
Well, I think anytime you can support an actual florist versus going to the grocery store, you're going to get much higher quality arrangements and product, and you are truly supporting somebody local then.
Yeah. I'm embarrassed to say that half my flowers are grocery store flowers.
That's fine. Your wife probably still loves them.
She does. You know. And it's only like $11, you know, and whatever. And it's the thought that counts, right?
Yep. And that's one of the hard things for industry is it's hard to compete with that.
That's part of why I had Matt from Wilbur's on recently because the wine and beer in grocery stores instead of liquor stores, and you know I'm embarrassed every time I grab a 12 pack of beer at the grocery store or a bottle of wine
but
at
price
the checkout
and convenience
line.
Convenience are important.
Yeah, you know, and so it goes.
And Kroger's good, and that's one of the problems in the flower business is Safeway and like these other kind of. Not as high level operators.
Yeah.
That's fine. They don't really, I don't believe they put really a big dent in our business, but Kroger ain't that. Kroger's very,
interesting.
Very good, even on the floral side of things. And they tend to know what they're doing when it comes to those that they're delivering in Fort Collins via DoorDash at this point.
Oh, really?
Now, It's probably similar to what Matt has to say. The nuance quality, it's not even close.
Yeah,
the
quality
is completely different.
Yeah, totally. But
nobody actually knows anything and whatever else. Yeah, but
it was a wild transaction. It was a wild 3 months.
I'm sure, man. Yeah. Well, congratulations! Your first kind of significant exit of your career. I mean, you've been buying things and had one departure or whatever. I'm sure, but. This is a big deal.
Now we just got to figure out what we want to do when we grow up.
What do you want to do next? Is there a next? I mean, Tim told me one time that you actually just want to go back into corporate accounting someday, Danielle. Is that still true?
I think I do. I don't know. I don't want to do HR. I got pulled into HR a lot, and I know that's something you definitely
Love your people, but you don't love HR.
I love my people too much to be able to do HR.
Right?
Realistically. True.
Yeah.
I get pulled into too tight with them. So I think I want to go back to corporate accounting. I gotta figure out where and start applying for
Tim's gonna
want to
buy another business here, and then he's gonna be like, "Hey, I need you over here."
Yes,
maybe
he was pitching me one the other day. That was good.
But can you be satisfied where you're at now and just take your time finding the next thing?
We're definitely gonna take our time. I am going to really step back and look at what my, where my skills and where my passions lie, yeah, and try and organize, because we have the opportunity to grow, especially Mold Removal Express. So if we decide to invest,
You could put that in other marketplaces and stuff and create a Panda Express type brand, right?
There's been a very strong push from some high level franchise consultants. Mark Torres from Tiba Hut has pushed
introduced
me towards
you
a
some
few
people.
Times. Exactly. And so
he's like, dude, you're dumb if you don't scale this.
That's basically what he said. So we still need to do due diligence there, but we are gonna take a step back and say, okay, where are our talents best applied, in both for the effectiveness of the business, our people, as well as ourselves,
and
kind of
in our life and what brings us the most joy. Mm-hmm. We're in this unique position where we do need to work, but we can take this time to decide what fits best for our life.
Yeah. Well, I assume between S&G and mold removal, if you batten down the hatches you know, you got a chunk of cash either coming or whatever, like you don't have to be fast about it.
There's plenty of fat there for us to take our time as we talked about.
You guys are pretty young yet. Why don't you knock out a couple kids more? You're really smart.
We're a one and done. We have just the perfect daughter.
Let's have a compromise here.
We
got it right the first time.
That's true. And we have been super intentional. Like, I worked 60, 70 hours at least a week until the day she was born. And then I took 3 months off. And then only worked 2.5 days a week for the next 4 years. And that was amazing.
Making space for that.
Yeah, we made space for that. At the end of that, I was ready to work. I was ready to get back to business.
Right.
That's fair. So it fits really well for us. But it's not super clear. This step wasn't a step towards perfect intentionality. It was a step towards, hey, we feel this draw pulling us this direction. It's time
feels
to do
right.
this. Yeah.
Right. Well, and feels right is a lot of the world, really. Yeah.
For sure.
So I'm going to call a real short break. We'll jump into our closing segments from there.
Yeah, great.
And we're back. It's been a really interesting journey to hear. I mean, I just frankly don't meet that many entrepreneurs that started so young and have been so together on so many things. We're going to jump into our latter segments. We always talk about faith, family, and politics.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Danielle, you've already mentioned you grew up in a Christian school and things.
Yeah.
Is that still the same?
Yes.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I actually grew up Catholic.
Okay.
My family's Hispanic from New Mexico, and so went to church every Sunday. When we came out, and then started in a Christian school in middle school.
But a not Catholic Christian
school? Not Catholic,
school?
Yeah. And
does mom think that's the biggest mistake of her life? I've heard her.
My mom wishes that we would have gone to a Catholic school, because we do have some differences in opinion. Really, at the end of the day, our core is the same, though. We
Jesus
believe
is cool.
Jesus, and we both believe in God. And we let that guide us.
Well, and I have to think there was Catholic private schools as well, or just not as good ones?
A whole lot more money.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So Albuquerque does not have a great school system like out here. And so Tim ended up going to the public school. But at that point, I went to the private school.
Right.
My parents made a lot of sacrifices to make sure my brother and I could do that. Hmm. And in reality, I probably would have been fine at a public school, but it was really good for my brother.
You were driven enough, especially.
Yeah, but really good for my brother to be at a private school. I think he would have gotten pulled into a lot of bad things, and super glad that we had the opportunity to guide him in a different direction. He is an amazing brother, twin brother, father. I have two nephews with him, and they're just part of the joys of my life. I love them so much.
Did you guys have a moment where you're like, I like this kind of Christian, more or less Catholic thing? Or, does that a transition after you moved away kind of thing?
I don't think it was a moment for me. I think I was just at this school at the time, and I was learning a little bit different than what I had learned up until that point. And it just made sense for me. And so it's kind of just been ingrained that way. So I don't think there was a moment. I think it was just kind of a gradual move.
Yeah. Tim, same question. Like, what was that in your family background?
Yeah. So again, my mom and dad were separated from very young. Right. My dad grew up very heavily Catholic.
Okay.
Grandpa, his dad was yeah. was
my grandpa's sainted. Grandpa. Whatever. Sainted?
Yeah. What? By the I forget the order. The Dominican order.
That's like the
he's
like
legit.
Like the Freemasons or some baloney, exactly. Right? Not yep. just a Mason, but the Freemason. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. He was. My grandpa was very high achieving in all ways. But so my dad went every day to St. Joe's here in Fort Collins.
Oh, wow.
And absolutely has the awful taste in his mouth about that type of organized religion.
Okay.
He's a believer in all those kinds of things. But
that was his obligation, exactly, not his opportunity.
Exactly. So he kind of maybe passed along that not disdain, but questioning of Catholicism.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I grew up was pretty light. We believe in God. We don't talk much about it. We don't really know what that means all that much.
Yeah. Neighborhood or Albuquerque in general is kind of that way?
No, my household.
Your household, fair.
Yeah, not in a negative way. Just wasn't a significant part.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
that's probably similar to my own journey, actually. My dad was a motorcycle mechanic that farmed Saturday evenings and weekends. Mm-hmm. So he was never at church. He was farming, you know, if it was summer. And if it was not summer, it was football season a lot.
Right. Yeah. So very similar to that. We would go, obviously.
Right.
But on holidays and stuff like that. So we kind of had an off-again, on-again relationship with Christianity after we moved.
You guys have as a couple, you mean? Or
yes. Yeah. And not in believing, just engagement.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, if you will. We have a close friend, a mutual friend of ours, Reed Miller.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I saw him just yesterday.
How funny.
Who we met by happenstance, and Reed is so graceful but forward with his beliefs that he kind of drew our whole family into church groups and Mill City Church.
Oh, cool.
And all these different things. So we were pretty engaged at that time, but he really amped that up for us a lot. Mm-hmm. And I read the Bible cover to cover last year.
Nice.
And
are you guys still a part of the Mill City group? I know that church has had a lot of COVID kind of beat it up.
We haven't really since COVID. We're probably a little bit more preferential to Timberline just at this point, which is where we were going beforehand. Yeah. And we always liked Timberline.
Yeah, yeah.
A big part of it for us is child care and child engagement.
Right.
And the kids' clubs and how they interact. For us, I want my daughter to be able to go and I want her to learn stuff. I don't want her to just have just child care and playtime.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the reasons we really liked Mill City at first. And then now Timberline is kind of adjusted to where it's almost swayed back that way.
She'll get in
the car and tell us what she learned and just like how cool it was. Or they sang this song. And, you know, so for us, that's very important.
100%. So, We both were longtime members of Men and Women's Bible Study for years. They recently broke up, and we'd really like to find a couples Bible study to do it together, because we've done it separately for 5 and 7 years, I think, respectively.
Interesting, yeah.
So we'd like to take some time to maybe learn together.
By the way, something my wife and I go up and down in our habits of is a thing called First Five, and it's like an app, and it... Like devotional. This fall, it went through, kind of a devotional, but it's kind of more toward the ladies' side, but it's got good teaching and stuff. So, the book of Esther was the last full thing.
Cool.
And it takes 5 minutes in the morning.
That's
nice.
Cool.
After I get done with my shower, I jump in bed, we read some stuff, we talk about it.
Cool.
I go to work, she gets up, you know.
Have to check it out because we are.
That one-on-one connection is super important for us. You know, the community is great, and like, when do we actually connect over God?
Right.
Yeah. So we're at this point. The last recent season, we've been slightly less engaged. We've had too much going on the business side of things. But I think there's mutual interest amongst our entire family because our daughter, her experience has been so great between Timberline and Mill City. She loves nothing more than going to church and being around that and learning about it. So
let's bounce it over to family and talk about your daughter. How old is she now?
So she's nine.
Nine.
Yeah.
Does she have a name?
Her name is Annabelle. She goes by Belle. She is amazing. She is my mini-me. She looks like, well, realistically, she looks like both of us. Yeah, Tim gets a lot of opinions in our house now. but she's like a perfect combination of both of us. But she's me down. Like, I always read.
You almost see your own self.
She'll say something to me, and I'll be like so frustrated that she said something, what she said, and then I'll realize that I think I said it earlier that day. Like, we are the same person.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she's kind-hearted. Yes. Kind of trying to find her way. She's not the most coordinated or athletic, which we're athletes.
Love you anyway, Belle. She might grow into it.
She is one heck of a swimmer.
Yep. So she really engaged in swimming. So we've been kind of living the swim parent life the past.
Yeah, she's been doing club swim for the last few years.
That's kind of finding where your body's wired for.
100%.
I just had Mandy Mullen on a few weeks ago, and she was like, yeah, I can ride the Leadville 100, but like if you put a ping pong paddle in my hand or any sports thing, my lack of hand-eye coordination is going to show through like just like that.
100%. And Belle's kind of built like a swimmer. She's long arms, long legs, tall, lean. Like she...
Build those shoulders up a little bit. She'll be solid.
Yep. Yeah. So, no, she goes to Riffenberg. She's the only child, obviously, which as we bought a To the Studs remodel right before COVID and had the remodel going on during the bulk of the COVID shutdown.
Uh-huh.
We were actually living with some very close friends when things shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
And during the shutdown.
Interesting.
And it's been one of the greatest blessings. It's in the Parkwood neighborhood.
Okay.
And at the time, it was older. There was older couples there. Now the
Parkwood's turned over.
Yeah, the three houses next to us have girls within a year.
So great.
Oh, plus minus of Annabelle.
They just go knock on each other's door. Like, what are you doing today? Half of them just come over without even shoes. Like, they just and vice versa. They've all got stuff where we communicate with the parents and watches, you know, so we can text them.
Hey, are they at your post? Yeah,
exactly. It's great. It's so fun. She's just thrived so much in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
But really also, when we were doing the remodel and we were living with our friends, you know, we moved from a brand new build to this house we're remodeling and living in, just
a demo zone
like where we had to wear shoes inside
hot
the house. It was
100% folding table.
We didn't have a kitchen. We literally
grill only food.
I had like a little bar area where we had like a toaster, a microwave, and like an electric skillet, and that's what we did for dinner. But then we went from that to living with some friends to back to this house. But I think it really helped establish like the just like home really isn't like a
we're
house.
A unit. Like home is where the three of us are together.
Kinda. And neither one of us has ever been super attached to things or houses. And so I think that was really good for us to hopefully help establish that with her, that, you know, we can be happy and we can be safe in like multiple environments if we're together.
Yeah.
And so it was so awesome. Sure. And also having friends during COVID that we were just stuck with was great. We had other people to talk to.
Yeah, that was one of the most like connected we ever were. By the end of it, we were tired. I mean, after
we
moved like four times. And...
Yeah, I think we lived with your mom for a few weeks at one point.
Well,
lived in
you
one
guys
of our VRBOs.
You know, before your daughter, you were a two-person unit for a long time. Like going back to your teen years, even before you were really even dating, you were kind of starting to become a unit in some ways. And then, like, to have this extra influence in your life and extra accountabilities.
Right.
You've only really been accountable to each other for most of your lives. Now, finally, Belle is starting to hold you accountable.
So that's been super life-giving. Like, that moving into Parkwood, having the amazing neighbors that we have, having her feel like she has these direct, quick other relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's not just that kind of only child.
I mean, you can turn her into a latchkey kid anytime now, just about, right? Right? Like, you guys could do whatever. You don't have to, but you could. Yes. We always do a one-word description of the child. I'd like to get a stab at that from each of you, if you're willing.
I was going to say kind.
That's the word I was going to use.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what a compliment.
Yeah, she that is how she's wired.
Yeah,
she's super kind-hearted. It wants to help everybody. Always wants to be there for people. If somebody's hurt, she will immediately go over there. I just say, just in general, she's just wired very, very sweet.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's one of our we have six values at Loco Think Tank. Be smart, be kind, be true, be local, be the change, be you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I believe that kindness is one of the main missing portions of the ugliness
for
in
sure.
our world.
For sure.
And, like, so much can be solved and so many conflicts can be avoided from it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel blessed that that's because she was born with a kind heart.
Yeah,
there is that. It is the more I've been around children, like, you can
it's
see,
hard to train that.
Yeah, some are born that way, are not, and you can
totally.
See at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
When she was little, she would be so confused if somebody was mean. Like, she just
right.
Oh yeah.
She couldn't.
Yeah,
understand
if somebody doesn't
it.
Like me, I'm like, what?
Yeah, she could not like understand if somebody didn't want to play or something like that. Like, it just didn't even occur to her that that was even an option.
Yeah.
That's
funny. We've touched faith, touched family. Might as well jump onto politics. Let's see. Is it Super Tuesday? No. Is it next week?
Yes.
It might be today.
I thought it was today.
I think it's today.
Today.
Yeah.
Tuesday? What's today?
Today's Tuesday.
Today's Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, today.
So let's start at a national level politics. We've got a battle of the
dimwits.
Something. I don't know. That's as good a word as anything. Like, I was so disappointed, frankly, that, like, I haven't voted for a mainstream candidate for president since I was 18.
Hmm.
I voted for Ross Perot with my first vote, and I've never voted mainstream. But the way that
we've abstained also, or we voted independent a time or two, or at least
good.
I have.
Yeah, sometimes at least. The way the Democratic Party shut down any, like, whiff of competition for an obviously senile,
decrepit,
declining man, like, that just, like, the evidence of deep corruption in our country to me from that singular act is almost terrifying.
Sure.
Politics is terrifying. There's no middle ground anymore. Like, we talked about earlier where we...
Like, Trump wants revenge. Biden wants to protect America from Orange Man Band, and
like,
he doesn't even understand what those words are.
Yeah. How are those the people that we're looking at?
Right.
Like, really, out of everybody?
Right. There's a podcaster I listen to a lot that says the system is designed to produce the outcomes that it produces.
Sure.
Well, it's like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
If that's the reality of our system right now.
Right.
And South Park called it best between the, what was it, the turd sandwich and the flaming douche or something.
Yeah.
And that was in 2012.
Yeah. It seems like the power and greed have just taken over all points of logic from a leadership perspective. That there's just people trying to protect their own interests, which has been that way for a long time, but it's become comical at this point.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't even know what to think of. I couldn't even tell you how I identified with any of it just because of I don't want either of them as president.
Right.
I agree with you. We're not very...
You're not politically active, generally.
We're not. No. Yeah, we're not. But we stay in the know enough.
Sure.
But I read a couple headlines about a consideration of could Biden actually not run or be
replaced. Well, and then what happens?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, who becomes the candidate then? Because then it isn't really the will of the people on who's
right.
on the ballot.
Right, as far as an incumbent. Because you typically
right,
have
if Biden wins the
yeah.
primary and then there isn't time for another primary.
Right.
Like, you just put Gavin Newsom in or Michelle? Is it like a designated hitter kind of thing? Does Kamala automatically jump up?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but I thought for a fleeting moment that there was logic.
I don't think Biden will run.
Oh, really?
I don't think he'll be the choice. I don't think he'll be the candidate. I think the Democratic Party is positioning him for departure.
Interesting.
That's what it appears. Between some of the news organizations starting to actually talk about things and some of the dirt from some of the file handling starting to stick, the stuff like that, I think they're positioning him for departure.
Yeah.
But who they're going to put there, I don't know.
Yeah. You just got to find somebody in the middle, somebody who can actually communicate with within all the parties.
What do you guys think about Robert F. Kennedy?
Again, not being politically active. I've heard a few of his things. They seem to be generally reasonable. He seems more in the middle than any of the other candidates currently.
Being considered, I suppose.
I
like his disdain for the regulatory capture and his willingness to speak out.
Yep. I think a revenge tour from Donald Trump is just not positive. I don't care what you think.
I agree.
What side of the aisle you're on, there's nothing good that comes from it. So,
so it's once again a turd sandwich or a giant douche,
a giant flaming douche.
Yeah. Flaming douche. Yeah, way worse than the regular douche.
Yeah.
So should we talk about local politics, state politics? Like, we've got, like, this immigration situation is comical almost in, like all the headlines right now are how Republicans refuse to work with Democrats on getting an immigration deal figured out.
Right. And both sides refuse to work with each other.
They always play. Yeah, it's
whoever controls this news cycle.
Well, and to be honest, it seems like the system is intentional on perpetuation of the existing system.
Sure.
That's my probably biggest criticism of the current status is
there's no way for actual resolution.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and there's no compromise.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to be a centrist, good luck.
Right.
Your party is never going to put a dollar into your reelection campaign.
And you're, by definition of the media, you become an enemy of
60% Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema and stuff.
Right?
Like, they're like a couple of vestiges of independent thought among candidates. Or Rand Paul even is a good example of that, where he's like, no, these are my principles. I vote that way.
I've always found it interesting that independent catches so much criticism for, like, individual thoughts, whereas, like, issues with individual concepts, but like the two-party system, like, you can disagree with 49% of their individual thoughts, but because you agree with 51%, all of a sudden you're that party. Like, there's no concept of let's discuss the positions on each of these concepts.
Yeah.
It's either you are or you aren't.
Well, and if you're a person out there listening right now, I'll go ahead and say this, and you identify and agree with every plank in your party's platform, you're an idiot.
Right. You've drank the Kool-Aid.
Right. You drank all the Kool-Aid and you're a fool.
Yeah.
You haven't learned how to think clearly for yourself, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You guys don't have to say that, but
no.
I will. Are you independents then?
I would identify as an independent. I'm socially more liberal.
You're a libertarian too.
Yeah, like, physically conservative.
Two-thirds of our guests are that.
Well,
but they just don't like to call themselves libertarians because that seems too ignorant, kind of, or something.
Yeah,
or
that's how
simple-minded.
How do you identify? Yeah.
I think we both changed to independent a few years ago.
Were you left? Were you right before?
I grew up more right. Or New Mexico's a little more left.
So you were kind of standing out as a mildly conservative in a
private Christian
world.
School.
Right,
more
right.
Yeah. Business ends up being a little bit more right in general.
Right, right.
And we see a lot of that with some of the regulations that we deal with. And part of the reason of wanting to change out of some of maybe the flower shop, there's so many new regulations that we have to deal with that.
Yeah, like 2 weeks notice to a schedule change and some of that dumb stuff.
When we first got into a business, that didn't exist. And not that it's all bad stuff, but, you know,
it all keeps people from wanting to start a business.
My filings are at least 30 hours more per month from when we first started, just based on these new laws that come in. And it is
That's
hard.
So much.
Yeah.
Did you say 30 hours?
At least 30 hours more.
Oh, my God.
That's for a CPA.
That's 10
hours
a week.
Experienced.
Yeah.
Doing your own filings.
And efficient. Right. So that's like so much gunk in the system.
There's a lot. So, Yeah, so I would say we're in the middle.
It's interesting, just real quickly reverting back to the flower shop sale, that the initial conversation with these folks who own flower shops in Colorado, they said one of the biggest drawbacks of us potentially acquiring your business is that it operates in a state as unbusiness friendly as the state of Colorado.
Colorado has flipped from quite business friendly to very business unfriendly in the last 20 years.
Well, and some of the
accelerating that shift as well.
And so many of the filings that I have to do, I'm filing the same information with three or four different entities. Like, how is
just
that?
Just fucking ask them.
Well, and why is that not all combined?
Right.
I mean, if I'm filing it for one, I'm giving the exact same information.
The reason is because government employees judge themselves and one another by the size of their staff. And like, the more peons they have doing necessary stuff, that's how they like.
Well, we talked about cutting the fat earlier. You know, you figure out how to. Well, government doesn't know how to do that. Yeah, that's the hard part.
Government does not like public unions should not exist. Prove me I'm wrong.
Yeah,
I don't think you should use taxpayer dollars to hold taxpayers to up to. Like,
yeah, you're not going to find resistance.
I just think that's like public unions, period, should never be able to exist and certainly should never be able to strike.
Sure.
You cannot harm me using my money to harm me.
Right.
Doing a public service.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off.
We were, I would say that in certain ways, we were supportive of Polis throughout. Especially throughout
when
COVID.
I first saw him debate. Before he won the election against the Republican opponent, and I watched the Republican opponent, and I was like, oh man, this guy's dumb compared to Jared Polis. And he was fairly libertarian.
Yeah.
And fairly business friendly. And then he got his eyes on becoming a big guy in the Democratic Party on a national stage, which he still has like almost all of, like that's his big
thing. Well, it's funny how you've seen that change, because that's very similar to, I say, what we saw as well. Where you could just see that transition.
Yeah. No, he was a relatively reasonable person.
Yeah.
And now he's become kind of a suck up to the suckers.
And so they're making all these, you know, quick move changes that make no sense but have lasting impact for our entire state, but hyper focused on business owners. That what's the retail delivery fee?
Yeah, we have a Colorado retail delivery fee now.
Oh,
that's 28 cents. Accounting for it is
costs 50 cents a transaction.
There's no fee that's 28 cents per delivery. What point of sale or system do you know that's able to reconcile 28 cents
Most
per delivery?
Most of them do a percentage. You do your sales tax percentage, but then you do that plus a flat amount. It's just difficult. It's caused a lot of headache for places.
Right. Well, and so people just non-comply.
Right.
Or they pay, they pay for out of profit.
I believe that stupid laws should be ignored.
Right.
Personally, I think that's kind of almost an obligation
of
citizenry.
I'm a rule follower, so.
I know, it makes you very uncomfortable. I see you right there. But I think it's almost an obligation of the citizenry to ignore things that are harmful to the citizenry.
I think, unfortunately, what happens a lot of times is the business owner ends up eating that out of their profit.
Totally.
A lot of places, they can't figure out how to maybe charge that 28 cents. So then they're like, well, I'll just cover it.
Or they take the risk of not paying that 28 cents.
And that's one example
right.
of 10 things that have happened over the past three
Easy.
Years,
yeah, yeah.
you know, that are state specific that have complicated. Even if it's not added cost, most of them have added cost, but it has complicated the way even the smallest businesses do business.
Would you guys ever consider moving out of Colorado because of its poor business climate? Maybe back to New Mexico, be closer to Danielle's family?
I don't think so.
Thailand.
Thailand instead.
We're not moving to Thailand. We're moving to Italy.
Texas is more likely.
No, I mean, we really, truly love Fort Collins. Like, just love it. I remember just moving out here and, you know, we came out here to just go to school and it was never even a question after we were here for a week of where we were going to end up.
Right.
We just fell in love with the city.
The city of Fort Collins has also generated a significant amount of wealth for
us.
So, you know, we can talk about the negatives, but there are positives that aren't necessarily politically based, but the reasons to live in Fort Collins
they
have
haven't
generated,
diminished.
Exactly.
Yeah, for us it outweighs. Yeah. A lot of that hardship.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just see if I can find a Wyoming address to pay taxes by. Fuck off, Jared. Don't get my money. Excuse me. Shouldn't be that blunt. It feels like we've kicked that Cat enough. Anything on the political realm that you'd like to comment on, either from a business standpoint or?
No, I mean, I would say we do generally, we are not very political people. We have our opinions, but we don't actively participate in politics very often.
Well, that's a challenge, really. So, like, this whole Democratic-Republican thing or socialist-capitalist thing, it's really more about authoritarian and freedom person.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, and like most business people mostly just want to be left alone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, a lot of people actually want to be told what to do a lot. Like it makes them feel good to know that they're checking the boxes of being a good citizen and stuff like that, unfortunately.
It's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah.
I agree. Like that makes sense, but I've never thought about it in that particular
way. I don't know if you, do you read my blog? I think you're probably on my mailing list.
Yeah, I don't read everyone, but I read a lot of them.
I had one some time back. It was I too am an authoritarian, and the punchline was basically, and the authority that I listen to is God. Mm. The rest of you sons of bitches can piss off, you know, because that's the authority that I need to listen to, not the state. Because if you think the state is the God, then you're wrong.
It, especially when they go in one direction so aggressively and quickly.
Yeah.
You know,
well, like Michigan just stopped their right to work state status.
Yeah.
Which is going to be terrible for them. New York is doing such dumb things to themselves right now.
You look at what Portland and San Francisco
did. Oh, my God.
They went from two of the highest value real estate places in, on the planet to nobody even wanting to visit.
Right.
You know,
right.
Nobody even wants to go there. Doesn't...
That was another blog title from years ago. I know it wasn't a title, but like Europe, literally, like Germany especially, which is the economic capital of Europe, unquestionably it was. But Europe cut their own hands off to stop themselves from sinning.
Right.
From this climate change crisis. You know, they've went from 10-cent electricity up to 35-cent electricity because they shut down all their nuclear. They shut down all, you know. And then last year they're burning freaking lignite.
Right.
and tree stumps.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know.
This is hard. Sometimes you feel like things happen because it feels like it's for the right reason, but then it causes so much push into the other direction that maybe it just wasn't something you thought about to start with. But, and
like California.
You can't pull back on that.
Like, trying to we're not going to sell any non-electric vehicles by the time of 2030 or 2035, except the fact that our grid can only handle half of the anticipated growth in electric demand before then.
Yeah, I've seen there's a few states that have made that claim, and yet none of them are anywhere close to being
able, it's messed them all up.
Nor are there plans in place to get them to
There is no plan in place.
Yeah, it's when conjecture turns to policy without proper analysis.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to run over a little bit today. The Loco experience is the craziest experience that you're willing to share with our listeners.
I feel like that we've shared a few of our crazy experiences already.
Sure the accident has to be one.
Yep.
Tell me more. I mean, can you share more about that? Like, what was the situation, though? Like, this guy came across and hit her right in the side of the car?
Yes. Yeah, so it was a... I lived in a little suburb of Albuquerque that had two-lane roads. Some had ditches, some didn't. Where this significantly drunk individual met our friends, who were right in front of Danielle, they could get all the way off the road. So they swerved off the road.
Oh, wow.
Where he met Danielle, it was a ditch. So it was ditch or virtually head-on collision with a 19...
Oh, so you were moving. I thought you were stopped.
No, they were each going 35 miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
Or 35 or 40, somewhere in there. But so, yeah, just...
Wow! So you saw these cars like spin, and
It was crazy. The guy was like three times the legal limit.
Three times over the legal limit.
Oh wow!
Had an open container of Jack Daniels. Didn't really think anything of it. That's what it was.
Yeah, he was completely
fine. One of the more infuriating experiences of my life. You know, he just said, "Oh yeah, we'll wait for the police to come." You know, it was crazy.
Wow.
That's how I met Danielle's parents. Was that night?
It's interesting.
Right. So
what happened? You ran up, grabbed her out of the car, and took her to the hospital. Took her to the
ambulance.
Ambulance came, but
ambulance came. I ended up going with my parents because I didn't want them to have to pay for an ambulance. So I was like,
always super achieving.
Yeah. I was like, the hospital's not far. My dad and mom took me, and I had glass in my head. I remember weeks after having to pull glass out of my forehead that was just embedded in there. It was horrible.
Missed most of the senior year of volleyball. She was a four-year letterman for volleyball and wasn't able to play very much that year, which was unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Lawsuit. It was a thing. It's one of many things that made us grow up at that age in our life, that was a big one of them for sure. Yeah. And she wasn't lying. I was planning to break up with her.
Luckily, it didn't happen.
But she has still had a thing for her old boyfriend.
It was valid.
So let's go back to that. Like you were saying earlier, Danielle, that you kind of came after him, but were you coming after him to get some vengeance on this old boyfriend that you weren't quite done yet? What was the situation there?
No, it wasn't like that. I was 18 or 17.
Right. I wasn't quite emotionally fully developed yet.
I don't know. At the time, it just seemed like a good idea.
We had been friends for so long at that point. Or not for so long, but had deep friendships, at that point. That there were a lot of intermixed things. I was pretty independent at that point in my life. So there were parties and like all kinds of things that were happening.
You were basically free range from the time you had a job.
Yes, 100%.
Yep. Whereas you were definitely not that because
that
isn't your personality
style. No, and
you would find a pen for yourself if you got let out the free range, kind of.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Love you, Daniela.
I totally would. I like organization and guidelines. I thrive in having a schedule.
Could I tell you guys a story about my wife and I? Because it's kind of relevant to the same. Yeah. So Jill's a organizer planner for sure. And I'm not. And in June of 2020, we rented my friend's RV for $100 a day, unlimited mileage. Thank God.
Nice.
We went to ultimately go to Tacoma, Washington to see her sister for their shared, their twins too, for their shared 40th birthday. So we were leaving like May 24th. We had to be in Tacoma June 11th. And otherwise there wasn't really a plan. We had 3 weeks and a pocket full of stimulus debit cards from Uncle Sam.
Nice.
And a Ford V10 31-foot Class C RV. And I was like, we're ready.
Your lack of plan is already stressing me out.
Right. And Jill is freaking out, man. She's like, well, where are we going to stay each day? What campground is this and that? I'm like, we'll stay at a fucking Walmart if we need to. We got a camper.
Nope. Nope. I wouldn't make it.
That idea wouldn't get anywhere, even like off the ground. It would have been
right.
That's not gonna
happen. Well, we ended up, we talked through it, and we were actually I'd recommend you guys to, we can talk more about it after, but we have this thing we've been using in Loco, because I've been the mixologist for years, which means I try to figure out where you would fit and which people you'd really jive with in these chapters, who needs your skill set and all that.
Sure.
But we've invested in this thing called Halos Relational Intelligence. And Jill and I were studying this like at the same exact time. I was going through a 24-hour certification thing. And as they started to unfold the nature of her character, and it even gets deeper because in our relationship, I had been getting increasingly frustrated that all my new ideas were getting shot down like the instant they came out of my mouth. And I didn't like it. You might have experienced this before, Tim.
Maybe.
We've never had that happen.
And once I knew more about kind of her wiring, every one of my new ideas was a threat to her having a place for everything and everything in its place, kind of.
Mm.
And it just gave me so much grace.
It's true. Sorry, I'm laughing because
you're gonna love
this. Literally, it's
your life. Yeah, you guys. We should probably double date sometime, honestly. And you and Jill can go talk about organizing things, and we can float ideas, and then we'll come back together. It'll be all good. So anyway, I say all that to just compliment the way that you guys have chosen to embrace one another's differentness.
Enthusiasm over there.
Yeah, enthusiasm with differentness even.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that because it has been... It is our secret sauce of just like being able to recognize each other, support one another, even when we don't always agree.
Yeah.
And it's had a unique blend of work and parenthood and marriage and spiritual journey and all those kinds of things. So,
well, I would say it kind of starts in some ways with covenant, right? You're like, we're married.
Sure.
And we're going to be married until we're dead.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the rule.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to figure it out in between there. And you're not allowed to be an asshole. And you're not allowed to be a bitch.
And you're going
to
go through seasons. Like,
the way it is.
I remember my Bible study leader talked about seasons in life. And like that would be her question to us when we first started is, where are you at? What season are you in right now? Because you're going to have ups and downs. And it's going to feel like sometimes you're on this high. But then it's also going to feel like sometimes where you just don't have and out, you don't have an opportunity to change what's going on, but you're just in a season, so you have to try and like you do have to figure it out. You do have these opportunities, and so you know, with the different personalities, we always are going to have those seasons, and you know, we do have our ups and downs, but you got to just focus on what getting to the next season sometimes.
Is there any crazy stories that I kind of like slammed you right into that accident story? Is there anything that this podcast is going to be lacking if we don't share it?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, the crazy story that consumes us right now is just this fast exit out of Palmer Flowers.
Departure.
Yeah, that's kind of...
That's a crazy story right there.
It really has
like
been.
Like a 60-day or 75-day or something. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, just the acceleration of it and all the pieces that we had to pull together were... has consumed us.
I'm sure. You know? I'm sure.
So, but I think the accident story is because nobody knows that about, and that framed so much of our you know, early life.
Well, when you guys were talking about how mature you were at 18, 19, 20 years old, you met Alma here a little bit ago, and she's been with me for almost 3 years. And she just turned 21 in January. And Lacey, who you might have seen but didn't maybe meet, what it said Alma's 21st birthday on the calendar. And Lacey was relatively new with our team. And she's like, is that a joke?
Right.
Because Alma's just, you know, she's 21 going on 30.
We've had employees like that.
Or whatever.
We value them.
Yeah. So amazing. So incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had correspondence with Alma. I would have never guessed she's 21.
Yeah. Right. Well, and she's kind of Spanish English equal, you know, and she's awesome.
We have a soft spot for that. We've had a lot of really successful employee-employer mentor-mentee relationships for people that have, you can tell they're 18, but they're not 18 in the sense of maturity and ability to communicate and emotional intelligence and those kinds of things.
Yeah, cool. Well, I don't have, you know, I guess, tell people where to find you or something. You want to be found? SG window tent, you know.
You can find me at Tim Jordan CO on Instagram. We're pretty private folks overall. Yeah. That's just our
part of why I'm honored to share time with y'all.
Well, we appreciate that. We've lived a lot of our life out, you know, on the forefront of businesses, and so. Yeah. Personal brands has never been like this key point for us. No. So
yeah, nobody's ever heard of me either.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so. So no, not an important thing for us. We're just happy to have the opportunity to tell our story. Yeah. We hope it's, it is.
I hope to inspire more people to start something, even if you're just in college.
It's scary.
You know?
Do it though. It's worth
it. And I love the opportunity cause I've told my story a few times over the years. But it's fun to have the opportunity to tell it together because that's probably the most unique part of our story.
Sure.
Is that we've marched along together. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs or potential entrepreneurs will have a spouse or a significant other that they need to either reconcile it with or do it alongside. It's doable, but it takes intentionality and good communication. And it's fun to be able to tell the journey that we've been on with it.
Yeah, very cool. Well, Danielle, thanks for coming out of your show for this episode. And Tim, thanks for being here. Look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Loco Experience Podcast, produced and sponsored by Loco Think Tank. This is your producer, Alma Arellano. Check out our website at thelocoexperience.com to find all of our episodes, nominate future guests, or leave us a message. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at The Loco Experience. To support the show, please subscribe and share it with your favorite people. Until next time, stay loco.